Welcome to NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Here are today's top stories. Saudi Arabia gives a positive update on oil production, recovery ongoing after drone strikes. More than 90% of votes now counted in Israel's election. Prime Minister Netanyahu without a majority, but could still win. Hong Kong activists ask U.S. Congress to pass human rights protections. Members of Congress respond. And Japan prepares to host Asia's first Rugby World Cup. National team gears up. Saudi Arabia's oil supply is fully back online in the wake of a devastating attack on the world's largest crude oil processing plants. The kingdom also announced today it has joined a U.S.-led coalition to secure the Mideast's waterways.
The Saudi energy minister said Tuesday that the kingdom will achieve 11 million barrels per day capacity by the end of September and 12 million barrels per day by the end of November. The company will meet its commitments to its customers for this month by withdrawing from its reserves of crude oil and making some changes to some oils. Meanwhile, the state-run Saudi press agency released a statement Wednesday morning saying the kingdom had joined the international maritime security construct to guarantee the security and safety of the waterways. Australia, Bahrain, and the United Kingdom have already joined the mission. The decision came hours before U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's meeting with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to discuss the recovery effort and how to counter Iranian aggression in the region. President Trump and Vice President Pence never directly blamed the Islamic Republic for the attack, though Wednesday morning, President Trump announced via Twitter that he had instructed the Secretary of the Treasury to substantially increase sanctions on Iran. The Saturday attack on the Saudi facilities knocked out 5.7 million barrels of crude oil production per day, or about 5% of the world's daily production. It also took out 2 billion cubic feet of daily gas production. Yemen's Iranian-backed Houthi rebels have claimed the multiple drone strike attack. Saudi Arabia, however, says initial investigations show Iranian weapons were used. The U.S. has made similar allegations, saying the attack may have been launched from Iran itself, though the country has denied the charges.
President Donald Trump offered a Twitter rebuttal to Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who had said the administration's response to Iran was weak.
Graham created a Twitter thread about the attacks on Saudi oil facilities Tuesday. The South Carolina senator implicated Iran in the attacks. And while he celebrated the effort to create a regional coalition, he said, quote, "The measured response by President Trump regarding the shooting down of an American drone was clearly seen by the Iranian regime as a sign of weakness." Trump responded to Graham's characterization Tuesday evening, arguing that some had simply failed to grasp his approach to Iran. "No, Lindsey, it was a sign of strength that some people just don't understand."
President Trump has named Robert O'Brien as his new national security advisor. This comes a week after former national security advisor John Bolton submitted his resignation. O'Brien is the special presidential envoy for hostage affairs at the State Department. Before this, he served in various roles under both Presidents Obama and Bush. O'Brien also worked with John Bolton when Bolton served as ambassador to the United Nations in 2005. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has failed to win a ruling majority in a very close election. According to almost complete results published today, the outcome was a blow to Israel's longest-serving leader. The election shows a virtual tie between his right-wing bloc and a center-left grouping that would be led by former military chief Benny Gantz. This comes after an inconclusive election in April in which Netanyahu failed to gain a majority in Israel's parliament. But with coalition building key to forming a government in Israel, it could be days or even weeks before it becomes clear whether Netanyahu has been defeated after a decade in power. President Trump's former campaign advisor testified before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. He was one of three people who were subpoenaed, but was the only one to show up. NTD's Holly Kellum has more on the hearing and how this fits into Democrats' investigation of the president.
The hearing got off to a contentious start. Corey Lewandowski said he had agreed to a White House request that he did not discuss conversations he had with the president outside what's in the Mueller report.
Are you representing that the White House has told you that they are invoking the executive privilege on your behalf today?
I don't believe it's an executive privilege, sir. And again, I think we've submitted the letter for your clarification of what the White House has said.
Democrats grilled him on why he failed to deliver a message from President Trump to former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. According to the Mueller report, the message was dictated by President Trump in June of 2017 and was a directive to limit the scope of the special counsel's investigation to future election tampering. Lewandowski passed the message to White House Chief of Staff Rick Dearborn to deliver, but he didn't deliver it either.
You testified that you went on vacation, correct?
I did.
How long was your vacation, Mr. Lewandowski?
Oh, it was lengthy. I think at least 2 weeks.
Like with Robert Mueller, Democrats tried to get Lewandowski to animate the Mueller report for the cameras by reading passages from it. Republicans complained that the hearing was a waste of time because Lewandowski had already testified for over 20 hours for other committees and investigators. They also accused Democrats of using heavy-handed tactics, including subpoenaing Lewandowski after he had agreed to come voluntarily.
So you're willing to come voluntarily, just like you did with Senate Intel, House Intel, just like you did for Bob Mueller, for the special counsel, 20-some hours. You're willing to do that all. You complied with when they asked you for certain documents, and then when they want you to come in for an interview, you said, all right, sure, we'll do it. They hit you with a subpoena.
Correct.
The hearing was one in a series that aims at impeaching President Trump. But Democrats are split on the issue and don't have enough votes in the full House yet to formally open an impeachment inquiry. Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler has said these hearings are impeachment-like in nature and may result in the committee bringing articles of impeachment to the House floor.
At least two people were injured after a black Mercedes smashed into the lobby of a Trump property in New Rochelle, New York, yesterday. Video showed police and emergency services around the lobby of Trump Plaza with the wrecked Mercedes. Authorities are still investigating the cause of the car crash, which happened around 8:40 p.m. local time, but it did not appear to be intentional, according to local media. Over the past few days, the New York Times has been criticized for omitting an important detail in an accusation made against Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The reporters say the editors were behind the decision. NTD's Miguel Moreno has more.
The accusation against Justice Kavanaugh had certain Democratic presidential nominees calling for impeachment before the correction was made. In the article, a former representative of Democratic President Bill Clinton allegedly saw Kavanaugh sexually assault another student while attending Yale University. Later on, the article was corrected with an additional line. The female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say she does not recall the episode. It was a crucial detail to the accusation, and last night the reporter said on air that it was their editor's decision to remove it. While the omission was corrected, the president suggested on Monday that the article didn't meet the standards in journalism.
But to do that about a Supreme Court justice is a terrible thing. It's a false accusation. How can they do a thing like that and destroy somebody's life? I mean, they're destroying lives.
And although the damage has been done, the Senate Minority Leader Dick Durbin, when asked about the push for impeachment, told Politico, "Get real," adding, "We've got to get beyond this. Impeachment is the answer to every problem. It's not realistic." Miguel Moreno, NTD News, New York.
The FBI is asking the public to help them catch a bank robbery suspect nicknamed Mummy Marauder. By looking at this picture, it's easy to understand how he got his name. The FBI says the photo shows him robbing a bank near Houston, Texas on Friday. His face was covered with white gauze while he also wore a wig and a baseball hat. The FBI says he fled in a Mitsubishi Monaro SUV. There's a $5,000 reward for information leading to his arrest. Taliban suicide bombers killed 48 people in two separate attacks in Afghanistan yesterday. The deadlier one took place near an election rally for President Ashraf Ghani.
Ghani was unhurt in the blast. He is seeking a second five-year term in voting on September 28th and was due to address a rally in Charikar when a suicide bomber attacked the gathering. Officials said the Charikar blast killed 26 people and wounded 42. Smoke rose from the site of the explosion, where a giant blue billboard bearing the face of Ghani's running mate loomed over the scene. With sirens wailing, rescuers rushed to lift the wounded into the backs of pickup trucks for evacuation. In a separate incident, a man blew himself up in the capital, Kabul, killing 22 people and wounding 38.
The Department of Justice is suing Edward Snowden over his new book. In the book, Snowden talks about his work with intelligence agencies and his 2013 leak of secrets that led to his self-imposed exile. Snowden's autobiography, titled Permanent Record, was released yesterday. The DOJ alleges the book breaks non-disclosure agreements he signed with the CIA and NSA. The lawsuit is not trying to stop the book from being distributed. Instead, the Justice Department is seeking to recover all the proceeds from the book. Pro-democracy activists from Hong Kong testifying in Congress urged the U.S. to pass bills to prevent further human rights abuses against protesters in Hong Kong.
Now we are not only suffering in the political, but even humanitarian crisis.
The Room of Congress China Commission hearing is packed as Hong Kong activists, including Joshua Wong and Denise Hall, are calling on the U.S. to take actions.
So I hope U.S. government could reveal its foreign policy to China to prioritize human rights issue.
It is a global fight. We are in the front lines of this global fight to protect these universal values that we all cherish.
Hong Kong police have been accused of using actual force against protesters who have been on the streets since June fighting against communism infiltration and asking for free elections. The Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act will allow the U.S. to put sanctions on officials in China and Hong Kong who violate human rights and have undermined the city's autonomy. Congress have also introduced the Protect Hong Kong Act, which stops tear gas sales to Hong Kong. The co-chairs of the China Committee are both optimistic about the bills.
That it will pass. I believe it will pass the House and the Senate with a strong bipartisan vote.
I've been working with the State Department, so I feel quite optimistic that if we can get it passed, as I believe we will, the White House will sign it.
Rubio said a vote on the bills could happen next week in the committee. Senator Chris Smith said the U.S. should stop the past practice of separating human rights issues from its foreign relations with China.
We have to do a reappraisal of our Hong Kong policy. We have to hold the perpetrators of crimes to account to the greatest extent that we can do that, and that's through our visa denials and through not allowing them to do business here.
The protesters brought their slogans to the Senate hearing and also their songs. Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
And students at Hong Kong University hung up new posters condemning the Chinese communist regime. NTD's Jeremy Sandberg visited the campus to find out what's behind the message.
Students on campus are keeping busy with their studies, but judging by the number of posters and memos on the walls, they have not forgotten the ongoing protests. Faces have been blurred to protect students' identities.
I just hope the government will just listen to us for once, right? Just withdraw the bill doesn't make the cut.
Hong Kong citizens' main slogan has been Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Times. But now they have a new interesting slogan, God will destroy the Chinese Communist Party.
It's just they think they're the god of the world. They think they're the king of the China. They only want is to be cool. They didn't care about the citizens and the national people.
Many citizens in Hong Kong compare the Chinese communist regime to the Nazis, calling them Chi-Nazis.
Chi-Nazis just doesn't understand why do we came out? Why do we protest? They just keep calling us cockroaches and doesn't care about us. They just doesn't care about the teenagers.
Like, we really hate Beijing and the CCP. That's the... What they are doing is very close to Nazi, right? That's we don't want this happen anymore in this modern society.
Born into a free society, students in Hong Kong are not willing to have that freedom suddenly snatched away from them.
They're born to be free. We're born to be free, right? Then we should not be contained by CCP no longer. And that's why we want to be an example, not to Hong Kong, not to China, but to the whole world.
Protests are now in their 15th week and are likely to continue until citizens achieve free elections and justice against ongoing police brutality.
Cannot get rid of Beijing, then there is no more future in Hong Kong to us. Yeah.
Yes, and we think if we, the Hong Kong, succeeded to be free out of the rule of CCP, I think the other cities in China may follow us, and so that the CCP will be eliminated.
Looking to keep the momentum and stay strong, Hong Kong citizens are hoping the world will support them.
Fight for freedom.
Stand with Hong Kong.
Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News, Hong Kong.
Up next, the UK and Australia talk trade. Hope to have a trade deal in place shortly after Brexit. More when we return.
Many of those.
Britain's trade minister said today she's expecting to complete a wide-ranging trade deal with Australia within months of the UK exiting the European Union.
During talks with Australia's trade minister in Canberra, Trade Minister Liz Truss said leaving the European Union gives the UK an opportunity to become more competitive.
So there is a big opportunity for us to do things differently and to use those new freedoms we have. Of course, we want a good relationship with the EU. We want to secure a free trade deal. But what we don't want is the regulatory tie-ins that we've had in the past.
In a bid to reduce the economic impact of Brexit, Britain is committed to securing a series of trade deals with smaller, non-EU countries. Australia's trade minister said the trade relationship before Britain joined the European trade bloc framed the new trade discussions.
We see enormous opportunities in relation to the services sector for enhanced cooperation. The UK is, of course, a well-known and well-respected and regarded financial hub and centre of the world.
Truss is in the middle of a three-nation tour that includes Australia, New Zealand and Japan. She says she expects a quick conclusion to trade talks with Australia that will begin when Britain leaves the EU.
Today, haze blankets Singapore for a fifth consecutive day as forest fires continue to rage in neighboring countries.
Every dry season, smoke from fires in Indonesia, meant to clear land for palm oil as well as pulp and paper plantations, clouds the skies over much of the region, raising concerns about public health. The smoke also raises concern for tourist operators and airlines.
Disappointed.
Yeah. We came here to see a pretty city, but it's been, not ruined, but it's made a lot worse because of the haze.
The 24-hour pollution standards index, which Singapore's National Environment Agency uses as a benchmark, was in a range of 111 to 126 in the afternoon. A reading above 100 is considered unhealthy. On Saturday, Singapore's air quality deteriorated to unhealthy levels for the first time in 3 years.
Up next, a lost hiker survives on lollipops and energy bars before rescue. Hear his story when we return. A stunning story of survival. An experienced Australian trekker was rescued by helicopter on Tuesday after falling from a waterfall and crawling for 2 days.
Neil Parker, a 54-year-old hiking guide with Brisbane Bushwalkers Club, suffered the injuries after falling 6 meters down a waterfall, breaking his leg and wrist.
I had a bandage around my elbow so I could use my elbow and just basically scrambling, lifting inch by inch.
He was rescued Tuesday by Queensland Government Air Rescue in the area of Mount Nebo, north of Brisbane, on Australia's east coast. Parker said his experience conducting rescue missions with the State Emergency Service for 7 years ensured he had the knowledge to help him survive.
A lot of that training and that culture within the club is what helped me get through. And just knowing that if I didn't do something to get myself back out, the chances of getting here today were a lot less slim.
Parker was flown to a hospital and is recovering.
My kids live overseas. They're coming over next week, which would be good to see him. I haven't seen him for a while. So, yeah, it was getting very emotional, thinking it's not a nice way to die.
Parker survived by eating protein bars and lollipops, which he had packed as snacks.
Video from a Philippine broadcaster shows hundreds of arrested Chinese being detained in a room in the Philippine city Puerto Princesa following a police raid on Monday. The Philippine Immigration Bureau says its agents, backed by troops, have arrested 324 Chinese accused of involvement in illegal online gambling and other crimes in a raid on 8 hotels and other establishments in a western province. Officials say the Chinese were arrested after being caught doing illegal activities and that they would be deported for violating the conditions of their stay in the Philippines and working without authorization. The Philippines, backed by the Chinese government, has launched a crackdown on large numbers of Chinese who mostly enter the country as tourists and then work for online gambling operations, which are illegal in China. Up next, New Zealand will once again represent the world scene in The Lord of the Rings. That and more after the break. Japan will head into the World Cup opener on Friday under arguably more pressure than any other team, with the weight of an expected nation on their shoulders and a governing body desperate for the host to succeed in Asia's first Rugby World Cup.
The team prepares to face Russia at Tokyo Stadium on Friday. Russia is ranked 20th in the world and making only their second World Cup appearance.
I will say that the players are really excited. They have been waiting a long time, like everybody has in Japan, for the day to arrive, which is, as I say, only a couple of days away. Everybody feels relaxed at the moment.
Although results against other Pool A opponents, Ireland, Scotland and Samoa, will likely define Japan's World Cup campaign, if Japan has a big opening win in front of an expected record television audience, it will build belief that history can be made. Fans from Japan and overseas filled their shopping bags with shirts, rugby balls, towels, mascot dolls, and more from a pop-up store set up at Tokyo's busy Shinjuku Station ahead of the World Cup. According to the store manager, more than 5,000 customers visited the shop, and they are expecting more to come during the tournament.
I feel very exciting. I hope for this moment for years, and I believe all rugby fans are very excited. And we are enjoying the spirit of rugby, and we are very, very, very happy.
The 2019 Rugby World Cup runs from September 20th through November 2nd.
New Zealand will once again be home to hairy feet and pointed ear hobbits after Amazon Studios confirmed the Pacific country will be the location for the new The Lord of the Rings series, a TV show widely tipped to be the most expensive ever made.
Middle-earth will return to New Zealand for Amazon's upcoming Lord of the Rings series, that's according to the company on Wednesday. The TV show has been widely hyped to likely be the most expensive ever made. Amazon Studios says the adaptation will include multiple series, delving into a wider breadth of J.R.R. Tolkien's work, and dig into storylines set before Tolkien's The Fellowship of the Ring. Peter Jackson's film trilogy in the early 2000s was filmed across New Zealand. In a statement, Amazon said it searched for a place to bring to life the primordial beauty of the Second Age. They didn't mention Jackson's films, but it seems they agree New Zealand is the one in true Middle-earth. Amazon bought the TV rights to the books 2 years ago, when Game of Thrones ruled the fantasy genre. However, unlike HBO or Netflix, if this new show's a hit for Amazon, it could mean more than viewers. Amazon Prime subscriptions could also bring in new shoppers. In a statement, the company said pre-production for the show is already underway, and production will kick off in the coming months in Auckland.
And that's all for now. Join us again this evening for your NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer.